Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcasts. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. This week, we watched All of Us Strangers, written and directed by Andrew Hay. All of Us Strangers is a 2023 British romantic fantasy film about a screenwriter who is drawn back to his childhood home, and he enters into a fledgling relationship with a mysterious neighbor as he then discovers his parents appear to be living on the night that they died. And this film is based on the 1987 novel Strangers by Taichi Yamada. Yeah. So this film stars Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Claire Foy, and Jamie Bell. Dale, tell us your thoughts about this movie.
I loved this movie. It felt like you're in the midst of somebody's like therapy session in a way. And how you like they're processing like loss and grief. Like the key thing that pops out to me in this movie, like the overall theme is like, you remember when everybody, well, remember when watching WandaVision and the Vision kind of says, what is grief but love not preserving? I think this movie kind of encapsulates that question. Like all throughout the movie, you are basically reimagining. In the movie, you're sitting through a reimagining of his memories and his childhood and whatnot, and also the ending as well. So yeah, I thought it was a really moving picture.
Yeah, this movie has just been in like niggling in my brain for for months now, and I was expecting, like, everyone was saying, "Oh, you're gonna be devastated. You're gonna cry. This, that, and the third." And when I watched it, I knew it was going to be about grief in some type of way, about facing that, coming to terms with it. And I really enjoyed how the surrealism of it, like the fact that you were kind of like lulled into this like very strange world that seems like normal life, but then you get this other side where it's like, you don't know if you are seeing reality in some way, like, is it just in his head or certain parts in his head and other parts real? Like, it was kind of confusing, which I really enjoyed. Like, I just enjoyed how it was told because you were never, well, I guess for myself, I was never like quite sure like what was going on. And I feel like even in like the editing choices and how it was shot, like, I feel like that all kind of lulls you into like a sense that like you are now a part of this world. I'm not really sure what's exactly going on, but watching a person struggle to come to terms with his sexuality, but also like his past and missing his parents and also falling in love with somebody else. So it was a nice like little mix of things that kind of talked about the human condition in a really interesting and new way, which I love. I love the fantasy sci-fi stuff. So I was very into this movie.
Yeah, this movie and of course American Fiction. I love that we watch both them back to back.
Yeah,
and it kind of, and it's like once again reinforcing that topic that we've both covered with a lot of creatives and writers, that they are writing out their childhood traumas or issues in modern media for everybody to consume as they're just as they're processing stuff they dealt with in writing and directing these projects, the audience, ourselves, we are also processing as we're witnessing what's playing out on screen. And I love that so much. Like, and the director Andrew Haig like sums it perfectly. And I don't just think this applies to queer people, but in the auspices of this movie it does. He said, a generation of queer people are grieving over a childhood they never had. Mm-hmm. And that's the aspect that we very little see in modern media at all. Like I know for Black people, we saw that with Moonlight, you know, but, and then this movie, you really don't see that side of people reckoning with the issues of their childhood. Like, I could probably pick from bits and pieces from any movie I've seen over the past 20 years and probably say I relate to that on some emotional level because it reminds me of something. But I'm happy now that we get these opportunities where queer creatives are able to express these same feelings. And it seems like their projects are so much more artistically fulfilling watching when we see these things play out on screen.
Yeah. I will say, like, I didn't cry watching the movie because I was trying to be, like, a little detective and try to sniff things out. So I was a little too concentrated on that to be in tears. But I think what does make me emotional and almost cry, like, when I was watching the Q&A between the cast and the director, Andrew Hay, because it's, like, for Andrew Hay and for Andrew Scott, like, this is very personal to them. Like, this is kind of their story, basically. And to hear them talk about it and talk about how, like, how much it meant to make something like this where it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the queer stories where, you know, somebody, you know, it's like a tragedy necessarily, like, or someone gets sick and all of that. Like, it wasn't about that. And I really thought it was so beautiful to see them, like, be able to do something like this where they got to have a sort of catharsis through the experience of making this movie with people who they really loved working with. And I just thought that that was, like, that's what gets me choked up, is just the fact that this had such a huge impact on the people who made it. And I know it'll probably make that same impact on the people who watch it as well. Like, you know, a movie like Call Me By Your Name did, even though I think that kind of like this one better, but you know.
I think this is a lot less groomy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point.
So
yeah.
I think that's why it is. I love like their little, like, the uses of time in this movie, where, you know, like, particularly like near the end, speaks out to me the most, is when he goes to, you know, his old childhood home with Paul Mescal. They kind of break in, I guess, and Paul leaves, but then he wakes up, he's in his childhood bed. Like, the usage of time at those scenes, I love very much. Like, it's funny, in watching how time flows in certain scenes, it reminds me of very typical student films, college student films, like, where everybody kicks off their project when they're making a movie at an alarm clock at a crack of the day, or some strange sound with the actor or talent waking up in the morning. And the movie kind of does do that in a way, but the usage of that storytelling idea or concept that everybody always uses was done so much, was done in such an artistic manner that, you know, you really don't, you kind of gloss over, like, oh, it's a really simplistic transition. But because of the way time has been flowing in this movie, and also the format that this movie is, like, a lot of times when he's interacting with his parents, he's always in a childhood home, but you really don't see how he gets there. So the artistic use of that, using that as a transitional aid, really helps you ignore the quirkiness of using it, you know?
Yeah. I think that one of my favorite parts about this movie is, well, I mean, there are many. One of them is the relationship between Harry and Adam, played by Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott, respectively. Because I feel like, and they've talked about this as they've, like, talked about the movie, but it is so tender. Like, the way that, and I think Andrew said this, which I think is very true, not that I would know 100%, but, like, from what I've heard, that usually when you have, like, gay romance, it's very, like, aggressive, and people are just, like, trying to hurry up and have sex, and it's all over very quickly. And he was just like, sometimes you don't want that. Sometimes, like, you want to, like, really enjoy the person, have it, you know, take it slow, but also just, like, have a relationship. Like, there's an entire montage where they're just, like, laying around watching TV and, like, not doing anything. And I thought that that was really beautiful, like, just how sensitive everyone was, like, how both of them were to each other, and, like, they understood each other's pain and trauma. And, like, it was, like, a healing thing for both of them to be in this relationship. And I don't know, the ending kind of screws with you on that, but, like, I think in the moment while I was watching it, I really enjoyed watching that just tenderness between two people and, seeing someone, like actually seeing someone and not just like wanting something necessarily from them, but just, you know.
Yeah, I love that too, because it really shows the transitions of how a relationship grows. Mm. Like his initial off-putness, like, I don't want to deal with this. And then he goes to his parents, talks to his parents, kind of like somebody. And then he goes through, okay, I'm going to express my feelings towards you. And then we're going to go out and hang out. And you see how a relationship actually blossoms. Like, it's not like a lot of times when they portray relationships in cinema, things rush really, really quick. There's never a sense of intrepidation from any party member. Everybody's like, 100%, let's do it. Let's go for it. You know, I think one of the few movies I saw with that, you know, sense of intrepidation from at least one person, and the actual growth was Time. Where in the movie, it's kind of like this guy has kind of time travel powers, and he likes a girl, and then he kind of learns how to use his powers. And you really see the progress of a relationship in modern cinema, and I do think that's due to also the death of, like, the whole rom-com genre as a whole nowadays. But yeah, I thought it was immensely, immensely beautiful. Like, it reminded me of, like, sitting down with my parents. Like, they've embarrassed me before. Like, oh yeah, I'm into this person, blah, 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 blah. And then, well, I remember one time my dad blurted out the girl, oh, you're the person my son talks about all the time. Like, dang, now I'm not going to work now, because now I'm embarrassed. But those innocent things of getting your parents involved in your new relationship, I enjoyed witnessing those scenes. And, you know, like, the one that hurt me the most, I think, was he's revealing to his mom that he's gay. You know, and she's not understanding anything about that lifestyle. And then, you know, she doesn't show up next time, goes to the house, and he's talking with his dad. His dad revealed, like, he feels bad about treating him a certain way as he was growing up, because he said, I always kind of knew. So, and if I was in school with you, I would have made fun of you as well. And then you don't get that interaction with the mom until the Christmas scene, where she's singing the song and he realizes that she's singing towards him, kind of saying, I'm sorry, in a way. Like, whereas the dad is like 100% saying, I regret what I did, you know, I'm sorry I didn't go to your room when you were crying. So they kind of hugging out, which I think is very, very good, because we don't really get to see times of either the softer side of fathers. Like, fatherhood in most cinemas portrayed is really, still to this day, even though we're becoming softer and softer, more aware, still very hyper-masculine. And I thought it was fitting that a father figure that is kind of trapped in that time period of being a hyper-masculine father is able to understand that I'm going to be revealing to you and open up. You know, because, you know, his parents have kind of been dead for 30 years. So they're in that age bracket of being hard parents. I'm a hard father. I'm not going to show my feelings. But he still does, which I thought was really, really touching.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I feel like when he came out to his mother, I was like, okay, this isn't going to go great. But, like, I'm sure she'll be understanding. No, like, the way that she came down on him. And it wasn't, and I think what they were saying is, like, it wasn't, like, intentionally trying to be harsh. It was just, like, sometimes, yeah, which is so true in families, you can say things and it hurts people in ways that you didn't intend for it to hurt them. And I feel like in the time period that we're in, we're, like, in the late 80s, where AIDS is, like, rampant, everyone had a lot of very homophobic attitudes towards, you know, just gay people. And I feel like that discussion went just about, like, as well as you would think it would, considering the circumstances. Like, and it still broke my heart, because I was like, oh, I thought you were gonna be like understanding, like, maybe you might not agree, but, like, you would still be cool with it, kind of. And I think that was just me projecting, because it's like, I love Claire Foy so much that I was just like, Claire Foy would never do this to anyone. But the thing is, like, it's not her splitting character, obviously. And Claire Foy, I will say it again, one of our best actors, period. Like, Claire Foy, if you watch, like, this, The Crown, Women Talking, like, she is such an amazing actress. Like, she needs more love. Like, I want to see her in more things. I'm sure she is in more things, or, like, they're coming up, but, like, Claire Foy, she's that girl. And that interaction that they have was very heartbreaking. And when she was like, oh, you can take the flapjacks, I'm not gonna eat them. I was like, oh my God, please don't say that to him. Like, it's out of ignorance and I think maybe like feeling protective of like not wanting your kid to suffer, but like just not just saying the absolute wrong things. And so when he was about to come out to his dad, I was like, oh, this is gonna go horribly. Like, if that was bad, then this is gonna be worse. So I was like bracing myself for like how bad that was gonna be. And the dad ended up being incredibly understanding and like, and identifying with him, apologizing in the moment, like even apologizing for the mom and her behavior. Like, I was not expecting that, which I loved, because I was like, they really flipped my expectations. Cause you think that the mom's gonna be understanding and the dad's gonna be harsh, but that's not how that happened. And I really enjoyed that. Like, I just enjoyed how, I think, I guess, Andrew Hay kind of knew what your expectations would be towards these characters and during the time period, and just kind of flipping that a little bit and switching it up. I thought that was just such good writing. Like, this film was really well done.
And it goes back on to like what you said, especially because, you know, Claire Foy does get a chance to be that emotional linchpin in a lot of her projects. Jamie Bell doesn't get the opportunity to do that. Jamie Bell plays a lot of masculine roles. And like, this is one of the few roles I think he's ever been given where he's out to emote and express like emotion like that in a way, which is like, to me as well, he needs to be in more stuff as well.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
This, to me, this is like one of his best performances that I've seen from him in like a long time. And not just that, I also love the fact that it, like, I don't know, I think people glance over, like, for me, like, with this movie is thing, even though I'm not queer, I do, like, the relationship between, like, sons and their fathers doesn't get talked about a lot, because everybody kind of goes, oh, sons and their mothers have that bond, daughters and their fathers have the bond, you don't really do the same, you know, where mothers and daughters, well, mothers and daughters do get featured a lot in cinema as a relationship, but fathers and sons has always been kind of antagonistic, so I do love this portrayal. It's kind of a bonding thing for them, and at the end where they're, before they go away, like, their presence leaves, he's like, I'm so happy I got to know the person you are, and not just know you from the person you were back then. I thought that was so touching, because and I have a dad, like, me and my dad, we be, like, you don't be throwing hands for real, but you, because that testosterone kick, you be going in, and it takes you a while to understand, like, oh, we both love each other. So I did love the fact that this movie featured that emotional bond between him and his father was being showcased a lot more than him and his mother, if you get my kind of understanding. I thought that was really important, because especially for queer men, that side for them is also very lacking as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's such a beautiful line that he said. Because I think a lot of times parents, when they have kids, they just want their children to be kind of what they think that they should be, instead of kind of accepting them for who they are and kind of understand that they are autonomous beings and you can't really control anything, but you still love them. And I think that's what this movie, for me, is really about. It's about seeing people, like seeing each other. Which is why I think that even though it focuses on a queer man, like a gay man, it's completely applicable to anyone, because yeah. I think everybody wants to be seen by their parents for who they are. Every person wants to be seen by a potential partner for who they are. So it's just like really about like seeing someone and just accepting and loving them. I think that that's just, it's such a simple message, but I think that it's a message that we don't always hear all the time. So
it goes back to American Fiction, where Sterling K. Brown's character, a queer black man, when you know him and they're both talking at the party, he's like, you mentioned it before, it's like, oh, would you want dad to know if dad was here? And he was like, at least he would know who I am, you know? Very powerful subject matter and topics.
Yeah. So, the ending.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about the ending? What did you think about it?
It's a bittersweet ending. Because it kicks off with him initially mentioning and becoming aware of part of his whole attachment to his parents being there and not being there in a way was the fact that he's always been lonely. And his parents, like, okay, you're not lonely anymore. We can't be your emotional support or linchpin anymore. You have somebody else there. And for him to realize that and then go see his parents like one more time, you know, spend a day with him because he's still afraid to let him go. And then he's like, all right, I can let you go. I can let somebody else in. And the person he wants to let in is not there in a physical form anymore. That is so heart-wrenching because you see the journey of somebody escaping that pit that they've had. And now they have to retreat back into that pit. Once again, it's a very, like that, the ending of the movie was probably the most emotionally wrenching for me in that whole circle that he was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, the whole movie, I was like, is Harry alive? Like, I was just wondering that the entire time. And so, unfortunately, it did kind of occupy my brain to a point where I wasn't, like, again, crying. But, because a part of me was like, I don't know. Like, I would love it for him to just be here and for this relationship to be real. Like, I wanted that so badly for Adam. But then when he takes Adam to, I mean, when Adam takes Harry to their Adam's house, and they're, like, looking through the windows and stuff, and he's like, oh, I can see your parents. I was like, oh, okay, I don't think he's with us anymore. So that was, like, a huge blow, because I was like, so what has he been thinking? Like, that was my question. That's why I was asking a lot of questions while I was watching this. I was like, so when he goes back to the house, like, is anyone there? Does anyone live there? Like, have they spotted him? Just, like, wandering around their house for weeks. Like, if Harry wasn't there, then what was he doing the entire time? Like, did he just, like, hang out by himself and the relationship was just playing around in his head? Like, I don't know. I had many questions. But when he walks into Harry's apartment and he, like, you don't see the body at all. He just opens the door and you can see him look in. And that Andrew Scott, again, phenomenal actor. Like, everyone in this movie is so good. Like, the performances are so amazing. But just that look on his face, I was like, ah, damn, no. And then when you realize that, like, it happened so early in the movie, I was like, what? So, like, none of it was real? Please don't, none of it? Like, that happens after Harry goes to his apartment for the first time. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe this. But then because he had carried his parents in his head for that long, he's able to kind of carry Harry with him in that way, even though he knows the truth. And that last line when he was like, why didn't no one find me? I was like, oh, please, I can't take it. It's too much. It's too much. But I'm kind of like, is this a happy ending? Because he's not really with him. Yeah. But I guess he's with them spiritually, but physically, like, he is not with him. And that makes me a little scared, because I'm like, you just conjured up the spirits of your dead parents and your dead potential lover. Like, do we need to see somebody? Like, I'm a little worried for Adam. I don't know. There's not a part two to this, but, like, if there was a part two, I would just be like, I think we should talk to someone. But, yeah, so I don't know if it was a happy ending, but yeah, I don't know.
it's not a happy ending at all. It's a really sad ending. Like I said, like, he has that apprehension of, oh, I might like him after that first interaction. And then from then on, he's, because his, I guess, attraction grows from the idea in his head, that infatuation thing, he's able to still perceive him as still being there and present in the real world until he actually goes to his house. You know, and that's the thing people say when you have, like, the idea or the perception of somebody in your head and not the real person, it can really mess you up. And at this movie, it kind of did, on the romance side, it kind of did mess him up a bit. So,
Yeah, that was crazy. I will say that I really enjoyed the trip scene when they're in the club. That was really good. That was fun. Well, until, you know, it wasn't fun anymore. But, like, for the moments that it was fun, like, I was like, oh, this is good. But the music was really good. I was like, okay, I'm into it. And then it got the way it got. So, but it's like, it gives you some happy moments, and then it just drops you down so quickly. Nope. No good moments. Like, yeah, it's really, it's a hard watch just because it's like, it's really sad, but also I think it's like sad, but beautiful. Yeah. In the vein of most like Paul Mescal movies, it's like, you're going to cry, but it's nice.
Except for Foe.
Foe, listen. It had its moments. Okay. It had its moments.
And I'm honestly looking back on, well, not just looking back, but watching the movie overall, I'm not shocked or surprised at the job that Adam Scott has did with this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, from like the BBC Sherlock days of him being on Moriarty, I was like, this man is expressive as hell. He emotes wonderfully as a character. He has amazing comedic timing. He has a fury in what he needs to express. Like, if I was a director, I'd cast him in everything, because he's everything I like watching on screen as an actor moves and emotes. And I thought, I always said, he needs to be in more stuff, because he's a lot better than the opportunities he was given at the time. And I'm happy to see now, since then, he's actually done he's been given the opportunity to be more prominent in his roles. So I'm really happy for him. He's getting like this Fleabag. He has another movie coming out in the theaters, or I think it's on Amazon Prime, it's a series. Like, he's been given the opportunities now where he can show that he's an actual actor.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like Andrew Scott has always been such a great actor, but this is his first like real like lead. I don't know. I can't remember seeing him, at least in film. I know he does a lot of theater, but like in film.
Yeah.
This is his first like lead prominent role. And then he has the TV show, the Ripley Show, coming on Netflix. Like, yeah. I'm very excited to see that. I'm definitely going to watch it. I am an Andrew Scott fan 100%. Since back in the Sherlock days, like, I stand this man. But it's really great that he's been able to get a lead role. And then actors who have done lead roles, like Paul, Claire, Jamie, they're actually supporting cast. And I think that was a good idea, because it's just like, listen, if the role is good, take it. Like, it doesn't matter how big it is. But the fact that they were like 100% willing to take kind of not a back role, but like just a side role, like a role that supports the main character in such a great way, like, that's amazing to me. Like, I like actors who aren't afraid to do supporting roles, because I think oftentimes when you get lead actors who have had the prestige and get all the projects, they kind of want to continue to be number one on the call sheet. So like, to see them just be like, these are great parts, so we're gonna take it. To me, that's real artistry.
Yeah,
that's what being a real artist means. But yeah.
I'm really like, the cat, like, top to bottom, I thought this, like, everybody's performance was like amazing. Yeah. So amazing.
I wish this was nominated for an Oscar, and it's not, but it is nominated for BAFTA. And it's already been winning so many awards, and rightly so. I think everyone's just done such a phenomenal job with this. So,
yeah. Moving on from that, the big draw of this weekend, of course, was the Grammys. A lot of, you know, I think Jay-Z kind of summed up everybody's feelings of the Oscar, like the Grammys, or in award season, in a regular way. Some of y'all gonna feel like you've been robbed, and some of y'all gonna actually be robbed, you know, in regards to him talking about, you know, Beyonce and, you know, not getting, she's been nominated for almost every other category and won, but has never won for Album of the Year. You know, he kind of summed up a lot of feelings minorities have in regards to award season, whether it's the Oscars or the Grammys or, you know, the Emmys or the Tonys or the Golden Globes, when it comes to being nominated and acknowledged by your peers for your work and it not getting the due it should get. And then you end up with an honorary award when they realize, oh, we fucked up, kind of thing. So,
yeah, apparently there was a lot of drama that went down. Somebody got arrested.
Mike got arrested, yeah.
Mike got arrested. There was, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
California is flooding, so, like, people couldn't shut up late. Like, it was, the Grammys was kind of crazy this year. But, yeah, Jay-Z did get on stage, and he did say the thing that we've all been saying privately in our own homes. I feel like he finally just said it out loud, and it's true. Like, even if you see, like, what happened at the Grammys that night, that evening, like, who ended up winning the biggest prizes?
Yeah.
So, to me, it's kind of just, like, I don't care about the Grammys. Truly, I care absolutely nothing about that. I will, just because, like, what are they doing? Like, I don't know. To me, like, all the award shows are kind of booty, but, like, at least some of them try. I think some try and some don't. And I feel like the Grammys are just one that just doesn't try. Like, they're very blatantly biased. They're very blatantly, like, if you show up, look at the award, kind of people. So I don't mess with that crew. But I do feel like there is this feeling that, like, well, awards still matter and awards still are representative of something. And Drake said they don't mean anything. And I'm not trying to side with Drake, but he's right. Like, and it's funny because I was looking at an article where Carey Mulligan was saying that people are lying if they say that awards don't matter. And okay, true, that might be true. But I feel like what it really is that, like, awards shouldn't matter as much as they probably do. I think that's the issue. Not that they don't matter, but that they shouldn't. Because I feel like it's too subjective, it's not representative of everyone. And especially when it comes to Black artists, like, they don't care about them. Like, especially at the Grammys, they're blatantly just like, screw y'all. Like, if you're Black, you're getting hip hop or R&B and that's it. Stay in your seat. So,
I remember a couple of years ago, a Beyonce song was up for, should have been put up for country, and they didn't. They put it up for urban.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was a song shared with the Dixie Chicks. And they're like, oh, Daddy's, no, this is not. Daddy's. Yeah. And then they put it up for a hip hop or R&B category, and everybody was like, no, that's not right. And she didn't win. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous. Harry Styles winning over Beyonce last year. Girl, don't talk to me. It was that. I was like, we're done. I'm not even going to pretend to have an interest in this anymore. We're done. Because what the hell?
There's a lot of good and a lot of bad. You know, of course, it being funny, you know, hip-hop, just the whole music genre and the industry celebrated 50 years this past year. Mm. And, you know, one of the key standout moments in hip-hop and rap music in that culture, in our culture, was the fact that Will Smith won the first Grammy issue for hip-hop or rap album. Issue was they didn't announce that award on stage.
Mm.
Or they weren't planning to during a telecast. So that's why every rapper of that era didn't show up to the Grammys. They had their own party. You know, you go to now, Killer Mike wins 3, you know, rap album of the year, song, performance. They don't announce it on telecast. They announce it on, like, the pre-show and stuff like that. So, once again, and then the flip side, you do have a good thing, is whereas MTV felt that Victoria Monet wasn't at a prominent position enough to perform on their stage. Victoria Monet walks out with 3 awards on the Grammys live. So, you know, it's a mixed bag of the award season, and particularly music needs to do a lot more with honoring Black artists, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it over there. They have issues.
Look, you know it's bad when Billboard, the actual organization that monitors the sales and status and plays of these songs, tells you you're fucking up.
Oh, did they really?
They kind of did call to say it was kind of suspect themselves that Beyonce has led the sales for all these album categories and none of her albums have won Album of the Year. Same thing with, you know, a lot of the hip-hop and other black genres not getting their due on the Grammy stage. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. My Grammys is actually the Super Bowl halftime show where Usher will be performing.
I hope it's solo. Hope Taylor Swift's not on that screen. I hope. I pray.
We don't care about her. It's about Usher.
I just hope NFL doesn't somehow say, hey, can Taylor perform with you in somewhere? No. Give me this Usher
anthology. I think anthology. If that would happen, I would have to turn it off. I would have to stop watching. But, like, in the past couple of years, they've had some really great acts do the show. So, like, that to me is my Grammys. That's what I look forward to.
They had J-Lo last year, you know.
J-Lo was not last year.
Well, she was there.
Yeah, J-Lo and Shakira, though. But that was fun. Yeah, but, I had fun.
J-Lo part, whatever.
It's okay. We don't go to J-Lo for the vocals, you know. We go there for the dancing, so... Because she's a dancer. She dances. Okay. I was listening to her vocals. I think that for all of us, just don't do that. Save your ears and don't listen to the vocals. Anyways, in other news, King Charles has been diagnosed with cancer. That came out today. Mm-hmm. And the royal family has been going through it. I don't know. Maybe they always have, but now they're just deciding to be more transparent about their health issues. But he went in for like a prostate surgery just to get that dealt with. And then through that, they found out that he had cancer. And the Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales, also just had like a major operation. Like, I think it was an abdominal surgery and she's recovering. Mm-hmm. So like, there's a lot going on over there. But I feel like Charles's choice to be transparent about it is actually really helpful. And I think that's actually the better way to do it. I don't know what every monarchy has their own way of like doing things. But like, I didn't really know like what his was, because I don't really know what they were doing over there, to be honest. So like, I had no idea. But it seems like he's trying to like be more honest, be a little bit more modern. There's not as many people working, which is kind of an issue in the situation, because it's like, who's going to pick up the work? There's like, everybody's out. So like, other people have to step up. I hope that he's okay, because he's an older man. I feel like he's kind of be kind of okay, because he has like a lot of money, so I'm sure he'll have like the best healthcare. But he's still older, so it's just a little concerning. And I'm sure the whole family is just like in a state right now, and also trying to like figure out, okay, who's gonna do the jobs at this point, because everyone's sick. So I hope that works out. I hope they're okay. That's
You got everybody sick, or and you have two royals who are not working in a royal capacity anymore because of treatment, you know, to their relationship. Yeah, I think Charles, in light of, you know, of course, I think him and his relationship with Harry might be skittish, but due to the things that happened with them as children and their mother, and, you know, him, his like, oh, you have to not worry about the press kind of thing. They're going to say what they say. And, you know, his mother being all depressed, doesn't need to know anything. I think he's trying to merge both now, understanding his place as a royal is to also be front-facing and not as secretive. You know, so I think it was a good move for them to, actually before, like, he's 75 years old and he has cancer, you know. So it's not going to be, like, out of left field, like, you know, when his mother died or whatever. Like, at least, you know, government and everything else and his son can, you know, say, okay, I need to be fully prepared for, A, the loss of my father, and, B, to theoretically lead a country in a way, even though because the monarch really doesn't have any power in England. But still, at least everybody is made aware of a transitional period coming eventually, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, well, not interesting, it's actually kind of sad. When I was looking at the comments of this, when the story was posted, and people were like, karma. And I was like, yeah. Are you kidding me? This man has cancer. Yeah. Like, yeah. I think the internet is so, like, desensitized from, like, human life. Like, they don't value it at all. Like, it's crazy. They're either, like, are screaming about it or are just completely, like, dismissive of it. And that really sucks because I'm like, y'all are mad about something that happened 30 years ago. Like, everyone else has dealt with it everyone else who matters in the situation has dealt with it. Like, you don't need to be, like, holding this cross for Diana. Like, it's okay, baby girl. You can let it go. Like, it's just, like, the man has cancer. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, that's crazy to me that they don't see that.
That is not part, like, dealing with personally having many family members who've died of cancer. And my dad recently passing through treatment with his cancer as well. Cancer is not something anybody should gloat and celebrate and say anybody deserves. It's witnessing people deal with it is something I wouldn't wish on any of my enemies at all. That's not something I'd want to put anybody through or their families through at all. And I'm not surprised that people act like this because after Chadwick died and we witnessed him on social media losing weight and getting smaller and smaller, and everybody was kind of making fun of him. And then after he died, everybody was like, oh, you never know what somebody's going through. You have to stop this behavior. Every time something happens to a celebrity online where they find out they're sick or something's happened to them or their family, people crack jokes. You know, nobody has learned that lesson. Like, empathy in the modern age of internet does not exist anymore. There's jokes first, facts later. So.
That's true. That's awful. That made me really sad. I was like, this sucks over here. It sucks. Anyways, but wishing him a speedy recovery. I hope everything goes okay. Cause just as like a person, I know that's probably really difficult. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So what have we been watching this week?
Me personally, jumped up, like, it's funny that we're talking about, you know, the royal family stuff, and I've just been watching a show called SES Rogue Heroes. It's about, you know, it's a little historical drama about the British Army in the Western Campaign. What's the Western Campaign? Well, in the African theater of war during World War II and stuff like that, and how they're in Cairo, some of that. Kind of about, I think, Lieutenant David Sterling and that whole how they actually planned out and created tactics and planning for their whole campaigns in that region, which I love, like, history and then that kind of stuff. I'm always interested, so I'm enjoying it so far. I'm only like two episodes in, but I'm enjoying it so far. Okay.
I started watching True Detective. True Detective season one.
Okay.
Yeah, my friends and I are watching it. So we watched episode one. We'll be watching it each week. And the first episode is really good. I am invested into what's going on. Everyone, when this came out, everyone was like raving about it. And like, I get it. Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey, like, makes sense. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm very nervous. Like, it's giving me Mindhunter vibes. Like, really good, but also like makes you kind of queasy. That's what it's giving. So I'm a little nervous for it, but I hope it's gonna be good because everyone says it. The first season's good. Everyone says the other two are bad, and in this fourth season, Jodie Foster is really good. So. I don't know if I'm going to work my way through those next two seasons. I might just jump to the last one just to see what the kids are talking about. But yeah, I'm excited to start this journey. I'm almost done watching Succession through proxy. And I want to start that MLKX series with
Kelvin. Oh, the Genius? Yeah.
Genius? I'm going to start that. See what that's about. But yeah, so that's what I've been watching. And yeah, that's it from us this week. So we hope that you all are doing well and taking care of yourself. Make sure to check out all of our social media, support us if you can, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.